It's that time of week, the time you've been waiting for. It's time for Goat Gab, a weekly podcast about all things in the dairy goat industry. Sit back and enjoy an hour or so with your hosts, Laura Warren Hughes and Cameron Jedlowski, as we talk about ideas and topics that matter to the dairy goat world.
Welcome, Goat Gabbers, to one of our final episodes of the 2023 year. As always, I'm one of your co-hosts, Cameron Jedlowski.
I'm your other co-host, Laura Warren Hughes. We're happy to be with you today. And we are really excited to welcome back one of our favorite guests. We have Dr. Rocky Lemus here with us. So say hello to everybody for us.
Hi, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's nice to be back into Goat Gab.
We are tickled to have you back, and with a really awesome topic today. Before we hop into that, though, kind of wrapping up, as Cameron said, 2023, anything going on anybody's farms they want to talk about?
I can dive right in there. Just the slow time of year. December 15th was our official last milking, if you check our DHIR paperwork, and we'll wrap that up there. And most of the goats have been dry treated, except two. Those are we'll call them our winter milkers, or my mac and cheese milkers, as I refer to them. When I do need milk for mac and cheese, I will simply go outside and milk one of them, and then come back and make my mac and cheese. So I've got two on my roster for that as well. Just drying up some goats, and then lots and lots of family time, which is kind of nice as well. There, spent some time with my in-laws and my family from my wife's side. Lots of family time coming as well here on our much needed Jedlowski vacation that we're taking, which will be quite interesting as well there on that. What else do I have here? I officially call this dead time from about December 15th to February 1st, my up to something season, which generally means I'm making plans for next year and kind of thinking about aligning buck orders and all sorts of stuff there on that. And then also I had our committee's lists were announced this previous week, and I've had my first committee meeting already.
I think it is wonderful to see several committees already ramping up and getting things done, because as we all know, that mid-year report is due a lot quicker than what you think it should be.
Absolutely. And Rocky, I saw your name on the committee list.
That's correct. I'm going to be part of the International Liaison Committee. I'm looking forward to be part of that committee and see how we can expand our presence, not only in the U.S., but across the world. I think it's important that we promote the dairy goat industry globally.
Yes. And Rocky, I know you've been busy on your farm. So you want to tell the listeners what's exciting plans will be laid your way soon?
Yeah. As I mentioned before, Scott Jenkins and I own Coal Ridge Farm here in Tupelo, Mississippi. And it's been a very busy year. We started this summer with helping with the USAID Dairy Goat Project in Guatemala. We spent 2 weeks helping them. One of the issues that they have there is that any kids under 5 years old, about 65% of them have malnourished. So trying to introduce dairy goats, especially in those Mayan communities, to try to improve the nutrition for those kids. And then from there, we came back. We have been busy building barns and getting things ready. And then we went to convention. We have a great time at convention. It was very exciting and not only be part of the program, but also get to meet a lot of new people and people that we see on Facebook. And we've never seen each other in real time. So that was very exciting. So we came back, and then breeding season started for us just beginning of October. And so it's been a busy time. We have, hopefully everybody have been bred and is going to settle. So we finished the last breeding this past Saturday. And we're looking forward to this exciting breeding that we have. We obtained a buck that is our senior buck from My Enchanted Acres at King Posio. And we're very excited about those breedings coming up. But also we added La Mancha's to our herds. We got two La Mancha from Iron Blessings Farms, but also we got a buck from the Rocking CB herd. So we're looking forward to expanding our diversity of dairy goats in the farm as well.
I've always thought that Nubians and La Mancha seemed like a really, really great ones to go together.
And they get along very, very well. So,
and they're pretty good considering your climate, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think so. You know, one thing is it's taking me a little bit to get used to. You know, I'm so used to the big ears and everything else, just to go the opposite. It's like the opposite extremes, you know.
And do the La Manchas take advantage of the long ears on the Nubians as far as something to grab onto?
Actually, you know, we haven't seen that much happening. Yeah, it happened once in a while, but it doesn't happen that much. They get along very, very well. And the kids, the junior kids that we have and the two La Manchas, they have been together and they get along very, very well.
Well, that is very good.
Yeah.
And Laura, what's happening at your place?
Well, you know, dormant is a good way to put this time of year because it's just, you know, chores are easy peasy and just, you know, watching baby bellies get bigger. And our countdown is down to 37 days now. So, you know, pretty soon trying to make plans, you know, where are the kids going to go and all these different things. So it's pretty exciting. That's about it.
Have you busted out your ultrasound machine yet, Laura, and been able to play baby counts?
You know, I'm really not good at baby counts, and it's not, you know, it's not one of the top of the line ultrasound machines. So, you know, I've tried to count. We've written down what we think. We'll see how good we are. I feel like I'm really good at telling if they're pregnant or not, just not real good at the counting thing. So I still have two goats to ultrasound. One is like one of my favorite goats. So she'll be at 30 days later this week. So I'll try to catch her this weekend and hopefully have good news. Because if she's not bred, I think I'm going to cry. I don't know what I'm going to do. I really, really don't want June kids, but...
You know what, Laura? That's Nebraska junior yearlings, baby.
I know. And I always try to see the silver lining. So if we have to do that, we have to do that. But gosh dang, I really don't want those. So that's about it.
You know what? I bred three goats this week too, so it's okay.
Yeah. You know, Laura, I forgot to mention too was that we have two does that there were no coming in heat, so we were deciding what to do. So we decided to go ahead and take a blood sample just to send it before Thanksgiving to determine maybe they got bred and we didn't write it down or we don't remember. So we sent it, the result came back the Monday after Thanksgiving. One of them was bred, the other one was not. So we were trying to figure out, well, what might be the due date. And 3 weeks later, we have a beautiful darling. I guess she got a lime bread, you know, by accident. But we're very, very blessed that she made it okay. So we are in DHI. So we were planning to have at least a month or 2 months break from milking. And I guess it's not going to happen. But also, you know, we move into the new farm in Tupelo this week. And actually, on Wednesday, most of the pregnant does are going to be moving to the new home. So we are pretty excited about making that transition and get everybody settled before the rest of the kidding season continues.
Well, congratulations on your babies. That was us last year. We had some surprise sonnens at the end of December, and it was a similar thing. You know, I don't remember that doe getting bred. I don't remember writing it down. We ultrasounded. I'm like, oh, well, she's farther along than I kind of figured, but I had no idea she was within weeks of kidding. So, yeah, those surprises are kind of fun, though. And thankfully, most of the time, they kid just fine on their own, and it works well. But did you give her a Christmas name?
Yeah, her name is Dasha.
I like that. That's sweet.
Yeah, we were, I was trying to scratch my head. I said, well, I'm trying to figure out when, because I'm very OCD about keeping records.
Right.
And I'm trying to figure out when she got bred. And there we go. You know, it happens very early in the season.
So do you know who dad is then? Or do you have to do some lab work on that?
We're probably going to do a DNA. But I think, you know, the only senior buck that we had that was ready to be breeding at that point was our My Enchanted Acres Sweet Barrel, which is a Candyman son. So.
Oh, very nice.
Yes.
So. You're speaking the sweet language right there of the Nubian breed, Candyman. Yes.
So we're excited to see how she develops.
After seeing all those Candyman daughters together at the national show this past year, when they took that big picture, that could get me excited about Nubians. They were beautiful.
Well, probably we're going to have some available to come in this spring, Laura, if you're looking for a Nubian.
Oh, goodness. We'll have to see how things go. Who knows? Cameron, do we have any ADGA news that's of interest before we get into our really awesome topic today?
Yes, I do. It involves math here.
Okay. So
I texted you today, Laura, and I said, I need to sign up for DHIR and ADGA Plus in LA. And if you do that right now with signing up for linear appraisal and getting your application in, if you sign up for milk test DHIR there, and you're my size of herd, and you sign up for ADGA Plus on top of that, it is going to run you currently $155 for data collection. Man, that sounds pretty cheap. And you get 3 DNA tests on top of it as well. So again, $155 if you sign up right now and you are my size of herd.
So. Well, and those DNA tests, if you're going to be registering bucks that you want to use as a junior herd sire next year, that's just saving you money. So, you know, why wouldn't you go ahead with that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. So that's my thing there. Get signed up for that. Again, I feel like that's a nice $155 right there that you're going to spend. I get it. It's expensive there. So it's cheaper if you have a smaller herd as well. But again, remember that as well. So get that signed up for. I'm going to sign up for that probably either after the podcast or do that tomorrow morning here on that. So that specifically happened as well. Another thing I do want you to be aware is there was a fourth quarter news and events that came out. When that fourth quarter news and events came out, there was an updated password to the ADGA publications. So please be aware of the updated password. Right, Laura?
Yes. And it's it should have been sent out to you in your email. So check it. And don't forget to check your junk or your spam, because sometimes, you know, emails go there when you don't mean for them to. But it's an easy password. And you know, they need to update that every once in a while. Somebody had asked me the other day why these things have to be, you know, for passwords. And, you know, one thing, it is a benefit of being a member that you get some of these publications. And the other thing is, you know, there are unscrupulous people on the internet, and they can take down personal information like addresses and phone numbers and so forth. And having that behind a password connect or protected area, that just, you know, limits a little bit who all can see addresses of people. So I don't think it's a bad thing to have it on there.
I agree. I was going to bring that up. Thank you, Laura. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah. And also don't forget, online voting is available for choosing the national show judges for this year. And boy, that was a slick process. That was easy peasy.
Yes. And I'm going to say this probably multiple times on the podcast, but I want to start it right now. It is essential that you let your voice be heard. These are the judges that shape the future of your breed. By golly, everyone is looking at that shirt that you wear at the national, that you buy at the national show, and looking at those national champions from the previous year. Everyone knows that, and it's not just here in the United States. It's internationally as well. Those judges shape the future of the breed. Let your voice be heard for the breed to pick those judges. Sorry.
Do you think he's a little adamant about that, Rocky?
He's pretty enthusiastic about it, so.
You know what? You can't complain if you didn't vote. So
Yeah, I think it's very important that you should remember is that you vote to make decisions that affect the organization and the future of the organization.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things that you do need to make to do that vote, however, is a pin. And again, that was sent to everybody through their email so that they could easily vote. And, you know, I've seen some chatter on social media about this. Well, we have several accounts in our house and they all go to the same email or whatever. They will send you a separate pin for each account that's associated with that email number. So, like two of my accounts are associated with my one email, and then my daughters each have a different email and they got pins sent to their account. So just don't freak out if you don't have as many pins as what you think you should. It might have gone to a different email. So
yes,
just double check that. Makes it easy. You can also vote by mail if you'd rather, the old fashioned way. So
Correct. But I did it on my phone. It was so easy.
Oh, cool. It worked on your phone. That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, are we ready to get on to our awesome topic?
I'm ready.
Okay. So since we have Dr. Lemus with us here today, I'd like to go ahead and tell you a little bit about his background if you haven't had a chance to meet him. He's the assistant professor and the Extension Forage Specialist at Mississippi State University in the Department of Plant and Soil Sciences. He's also the Extension Forage Specialist and leader for the Center of Forage Management and Environmental Stewardship. His areas of expertise include bioenergy crops, carbon sequestration, hope I got that okay, nutrient management, hay quality and utilization, grazing systems, pasture management, and clover utilization. He has a vast knowledge of the forages that can be grown in the northern transition and southern zones of the U.S. with both cool season and warm season grasses. And he's been published. He has 29 peer-reviewed publications, 3 book chapters, 54 extension publications, 95 abstracts, 26 bulletins, and 24 research reports. And on top of this, he still has time to, as he said, raise a dairy goat herd and build a new farm. So welcome back again, Rocky. We are so glad to have you.
Thank you, Laura. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys and be part of this great dairy goat industry as well.
We always enjoy having you. And let's kind of jump in. Laura, what are we talking about?
So we are going to talk about something that's probably near and dear to almost everybody who raises dairy goats, and especially this time of year, hay shortages and nutritional needs. Cameron, I know that you talk a lot about getting hay. I know that hay is foremost on my mind and probably most everybody. What happens when you can't get hay? What happens when you don't get the good kind of hay that you want? And, you know, everyone is experiencing increased hay costs this year and a limited supply. So let's talk about those challenges and some things that we can do, hopefully, to help mitigate problems and give our goats the very best feed that they can get.
All right. I guess let's kind of start in there on that. Let's kind of talk about the general hay market as a whole right now and kind of what's happening out there. Rocky, do you want to kind of give us a picture, maybe not just from a Southeast perspective, but definitely start there. But what's kind of happened this last year in the U.S. with forage prices?
Well, you know, Cameron, one thing that we've seen this year, especially in 2023, is what I call the trifecta. We have not only drought in the Southeast, but also drought across also parts of the West. So drought situation have actually minimized production, how much hay is available. You know, sometimes you might be getting 3 or 4 cuts. We have producers that have got only 1 cut this year. So that's one of the things that has been a major factor on the amount of hay that is available. But also we need to take into consideration inflation. Inflation have a major impact on this. Also in fertilizer prices, the cost of fertilization for hay production have increased very exponentially, especially nitrogen. Potassium for alfalfa production is a major key element. And that's also have increased quite a bit. And on top of that, we have the cost of transportation. So especially for people in the Southeast or in the, we call the Southeast completely, we don't produce a lot of alfalfa. There's a few producers of alfalfa, so the availability of alfalfa is very limited. So most of the alfalfa that we get comes from out west. And when brokers have brought alfalfa hay this year to be sold in the area, what we see is that they're still sitting with that hay because the cost of transportation, the cost of production have increased so much that it's pricing out a lot of people that usually be able to afford the hay. So a lot of people are looking for other alternatives, more grassy hay. But with the drought situation, grass hay also has been in very limited supply as well. So those one of the things that I think is very important. So what we've seen is that those prices increase beyond what the average market prices are showing. So it's important, I think, that people gain an idea on what hay is worth, and it's important before they actually looking at buying that hay. Sometimes making sure that if you're going to buy hay from a hay supplier or a broker, that if they tell you that it's a 60-pound bale, actually make sure that it's a 60-pound bale that you're paying for. And these values can shift dramatically from one area to another, even within a county. I've seen shifting in prices quite a bit. So this shift in value is especially important if local supply is a concern. So a good source of time sometimes to determine prices could be check some of the reports that are available online. I know that the USDA Agricultural Prices Report is administered by Cornell University. It's a good place to go and check what the current hay prices are for alfalfa or grass hay. But also the National Agricultural Statistics Service, they put out a monthly state level prices that is available to anyone as well.
Gotcha. So I got a question on that, Rocky. So I know at certain livestock sales, they record prices and the USDA collects those. For hay and forage prices, is there some type of regional price for that that's recorded, or is it only on a national level?
No, there is recorded also in a regional level. I know, for example, I'm going to give you an example. The USDA National Service with the National Agricultural Statistics Service in Birmingham, Alabama, they put every month, you can go and check the report that they put out for fertilizer and for hay that is in the market. There's also one for the Midwest. There's one for the Southwest. So you can actually customize that to your region as well.
Gotcha.
Very good. Gotcha. I'm going to have to look that up.
Gotcha.
So a lot of people during these winter months when their does are gestating, not milking so much, they really cut off on feeding a lot of grain, but may decide if they can't get a good quality of hay to supplement that with some grain and so forth. So let's talk about hay compared to a grain-based diet. Why might supplementing like that be a good thing or not a good thing, or what are some things to maybe keep into consideration there?
Well, there's a couple of things that we need to think about why usually hay is very important. And there are too many reasons. One is that they provide nutrition. And the other one is that also they provide dry roughage that balance the moisture and the fiber content in the rumen. So, and this is very important because this maintains a diverse microbial population in the rumen that will help with the availability and breakdown of different type of feed to meet all those good nutritional needs. But also, if you start feeding a diet that is high in grains and start balancing that with hay and some roughage, we need to be careful because some of these grains can be really rich in starches and sugars. And they can increase a risk for some type of digestive disorder, such as laminitis, sometimes rumen acidosis. So maintaining the balance between hay and grain is very important. Even though if you cannot get the best quality hay out there, it's very important to maintain some type of roughage and that diet to help that microbial population to do the work that they are designed to do.
Okay, so you talked a little bit about quality of hay. Mm-hmm. I guess on the flip side is quantity of hay too as well there.
That's correct.
Yes. So I guess what's the relationship there? Is it better to feed higher quality at a lower quantity or lower quality at a higher quantity given this time of the year?
Well, you know, it depends on the type of hay that you're feeding, because not all hays are created equal. You know, some people trying to compare alfalfa to grassy hay, and that's two different types of hay in there. So if you have a good quality hay like alfalfa, it's very high in protein, and sometimes it's surpassing that amount of nutrient requirement or protein that a goat is gonna need, then I'm probably gonna feed that in a lower quantities. There's no need to actually feed so much when actually you might see also higher waste of that hay with high protein levels, then you're losing that money as well. So it might be more strategic to then, instead of giving alfalfa as a free choice, I might be able to give it as a little bit in the morning, probably a little bit in the afternoon, depending on the growth stage of those goats that you are trying to raise. On the other hand, you know, sometimes when you have grassy hay, it's more high in fiber. So it's going to take a little bit longer for the animals to get the nutrients out of that system. So it might be best then to have them more as a free choice hay that helps them to maintain that rumen population trying to break down that fiber. That's one of the things that is also very important, is to know what is the quality of the hay. Because if you have hay that is very high in fiber, usually when we do talk about fiber, we're talking about two different components on the hay analysis, what we call the nutrient detergent fiber and the acid detergent fiber. But the nutrient detergent fiber is a number that is very high. So usually the higher that number, the more fiber you have. That means that once the animals start eating that hay, that fiber is going to sit down in that rumen for a longer period of time. So it means that it's going to limit also the intake of the animal. So the animal is going to have to eat more to be able to get the nutrition. On the other hand, if that NDF is lower, that means that my ADF, which is the acid detergent fiber, is going to be much higher, which is an indication of how digestible that fiber will be, then I might not have to feed that much. So the intake won't be as high as needed.
So it could fill them up, but maybe not give them everything that they need.
That's correct. And that's when you start seeing that you might start losing body score conditions. You know, nutrition have a huge impact, especially in breeding and rebreeding those animals. So when you start to see that your breeding cycles are not synchronized, you start losing body score condition, then you might want to start thinking about, you know, what kind of hay I'm feeding is providing that nutrition. Then probably there's where I'm going to come with a legume-based hay like alfalfa, and probably supplement some of that to help with that bit of better nutrition as well.
Got it. Okay.
So I want to keep going down this path of the nutrition there. If I'm a goat, what specifically is the nutritional value of the hay? What do we hope in a perfect system that the hay is providing for the goat?
You know, depending on the growth stage of the goat, if you have a doe that is milking, it's going to require at least 11-12% crude protein. So you want to make sure that you have something that is providing that. So usually that's why you see that usually when they're milking, most people are going to gravitate towards using alfalfa, because that alfalfa might be 18-22% crude protein, which is providing what they really need to do, get that nutrition, especially that protein for milk production and so forth. Kids that are in development also going to require much higher nutrition, usually 10-11% compared to a dry doe that might be only 9% crude protein to maintain those metabolic functions.
So kids like coming yearlings that are still growing themselves, but they're bred, those are ones that you really need to watch that for.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And sometimes one thing that I've seen is that some people try to provide a lot of alfalfa to kids when they're very young. And what happens probably, or too much grain, and what happens is that those kids start to get obese. And it's going to be bred as a juniors that can impact the breeding cycle as well. So it's all about balancing and making sure that you understand what is the nutritional value of the hay that you feed into them. And if it's not to that level, or you cannot get more hay, then probably I'm going to start thinking about some type of supplementation to help that nutrition along.
I kind of want to take us that direction here. Maybe your hay is not testing out to the level that it needs to be, given your current situation. What are some of the supplements that can be provided, whether it's a pellet, whether it's in the grain, whether it's something there that a producer can provide in order to help bump up that crude protein there that a goat would need?
Well, when we talk about goat's nutrition, there are three major components that are very important. One is crude protein, the other one is energy, and the other one is fiber. And they all have their purposes in the rumen. Crude protein energy is going to be probably the most important one. Why? Because sometimes people say, well, I'm giving energy for that kid to grow or that animal to grow or produce milk. But what we're actually feeding when we feed energy, which is sugars, we feed in the rumen. Okay, we feed in those microbes, so they can actually be able to go and break down that sugars and different components. And some of them are going to be absorbed by the animal, when others are going to be used by the microbes. But at the same time, those microbes that have that energy are going to come and they're going to start breaking that protein into amino acids. And those amino acids when it's going to be absorbed by the small intestine and the rumen and be able to utilize them as a building block for either building muscle if the kid is growing, or producing milk if that dose in milk. But at the same time, what the fiber does is allows to maintain that healthy rumen population there. So let's talk about, for example, if you're going to look at your hay being low and nutritional value, low in protein, one of the things that you sometimes can do, Cameron, if you don't have access to alfalfa hay, you can look at alfalfa pellets. Alfalfa pellets could be a good substitute for that because they provide pretty much the same type of nutritional value to that goat. One thing that I see advantage sometimes with alfalfa pellets is that you don't have so much waste, because you're feeding that as a part of the ration when either they're milking or you're feeding them once a day or twice a day, depending on your feeding regime. And so there's a little bit of less waste from that point of view. The another thing could be utilizing also shredded bee pulps. And shredded bee pulps, because they also have quite a bit of fiber and that helps in the rumen. But also it's important to find one to have molasses on it, because molasses have sugars. Those molasses can help that microbial population to thrive and do well in situations where you are short of hay or you're looking for alternative to that. But you want to make sure that you're balancing that ration, that it's not going to be, overfeeding or underfeeding the animals.
Gotcha. Thank you.
So Rocky, just as a little bit of an aside here, uh-huh. What are your thoughts on fermented hay products like alfalfa hay or chaff hay?
You can use it. The ferment is what we call bellage, and we see a lot of products coming a lot to the market. The one thing that we need to understand is that bellage is usually a more wet product. So when you usually comes in larger bales, larger square bales, or come in large round bales. So usually when you open one of those bales and you put it out for the goats to eat, you're going to have to feed it very quickly, because otherwise it start to go to spoilage, and because it's, it was fermented under anaerobic conditions, meaning no oxygen was in there. It was wrapped, so it, that fermentation occur. But also you need to be careful is also that you have a good, that the product that you buy is being well fermented. Usually when we talk about bilge, the moisture content of bilge can range from 40 to 60%, average about 50%. And that's very important to get to proper fermentation. If the proper fermentation didn't happen because you don't have the hay was too wet, or the hay was too dry to put it in bilge, you can have a bad fermentation. And that bad fermentation sometimes can produce what we call a prussic acid, or can produce a butyric acid, depending on the crop that you're using. Butyric acid means that the hay is going to smell kind of rancid, spoil, and that could be dangerous to the goats. It can be dangerous to any type of livestock. So making sure that if you're using those products that have been fermented very well, usually when we ferment those products, we wrap it and need to be fermented at least for 35 days minimum, so you have a good fermentation going into it before you can actually feed it to an animal.
Okay, thank you.
Gotcha there on that. Rocky, I want to ask you some specific goat questions based on hay.
Okay.
That makes sense. So some specific life stages there, because I think about hay probably differently than a lot of people, but there are different types of hay for different types of year. And I think that each different type of year requires a different mindset as it pertains to hay there. So when a goat is pregnant, would you recommend what I say hotter or leafier hay, or what is the, I guess I look at pregnancy as more of a break, and that's also that dry off period. Would you suggest feeding more of a hot alfalfa type to a goat, or would you maybe back off the alfalfa or crude protein of that to a lesser quality one to maybe save yourself on some price?
Well, you know, one thing that you need to do, if the goat, you have to look also at the body scar condition of the goat. Okay, if you bred that goat and you think that it is a little bit in the heavy side, a little bit more heavy than you want it to be, then I'm gonna back off from the alfalfa, okay? Gotcha. Because I don't want them to get heavier before they get to that last 4 or 5, 4 or 6 weeks of pregnancy, when they're gonna require more energy, more crude protein, and then. Because if they're fat, when they get to that stage, that's when we run into problem with pregnancy toxemia. They don't have enough room in there to maintain that hay in the rumen. So I'd rather see that you back off a little bit if the body score condition is a little bit high. And then when you get to that 4 to 6 weeks before kidding, and then increase that diet to make sure that you have something that is leafy, something that is highly digestible. That's when I want to see that alfalfa coming in, because they're going to need to get those nutrients as much as they can. They don't have a lot of room in that rumen to keep that fiber in there for days and days and days. And then that's where you start having those issues with nutritional and pregnancy toxemia in there. So I will rather see go a little bit more hotter as you get into that 6 week window to kid in that early in the season.
Gotcha. I'm just trying to think where I can pinch my pennies on hay, yeah. Which you should never do, but we all know that hay is expensive. That's the cheapest way to put it. There on that. I want to talk a little bit about milking. Would you, I think about lactation curves, and we have the examples in dairy cattle as well of those natural lactation curves. If you're thinking about pushing for higher milk production there on that, would you want to push hotter or more alfalfa with higher protein towards the beginning of lactation, or would you rather it see towards the tail end?
I think you're going to see that probably you're going to start soon off. You're not going to have alfalfa throughout the whole lactation. But I think, it, you know, usually when the first part of the lactation curve, I want to be able to see that they have the nutrition that they need. They're going to be in peak milk production at that point going up. So I'd rather see also a little bit as you get hotter in the summer. Mm-hmm. The requirements are going to go be higher. So probably you're going to increase a little bit more alfalfa towards that midsummer to make sure that you maintain a more consistent production if you want to maintain that consistent throughout the lactation and not see that huge drop off in the peak as we wanted, as some people wanted to see.
Gotcha.
I look more for consistency in my milk production than actually having to feed so much at the beginning, but then not feeding so much at the end, where then it's going to impact my milk production. It might impact my DHI records. I want to make sure that it's consistency throughout the lactation.
Gotcha. Well, thinking about towards the end of lactation, I know especially in Nubians, your solids are a little bit higher there as you go towards an end of lactation. Is there any correlation between the amount of, we'll call them solids in your milks, your fat and protein, mm-hmm. with the hay that you're feeding there on that?
That's a good question, you know, and it's hard sometimes to tell because, you know, it depends on what you're feeding. The quality of hay is going to depend. Usually, you know, legumes are going to be better than grasses. But cool season grasses like timothy, orchard grass, tall fescue, it's going to have better quality than our warm season grasses like a Bermuda grass and Bahia grass. So it's going to depend on what that person is feeding. But also in general, we see that that's a pattern that happens. You're going to have a decline in milk production, and we're seeing it here even with some grass hay, where we see that actually our solid still increases as we get to towards the end of the lactation as well.
Gotcha. And then my last kind of cycle or thinking about feeding hay there on your male, I mean, is there a difference between kind of your dry does that are not pregnant or your dry yearlings versus kind of where the bucks are or your male goats would be? And is there any like special consideration we need to take into effect for our bucks as well with hay?
Yeah, you know, the bucks, for example, our bucks do very well on grass hay.
Gotcha.
They maintain very good body score condition, and a lot of the hay that we use is either Bermuda grass, Bahia grass, or the mix of both, because sometimes when we buy hay, you find that mix in there. And they keep a very consistent body score condition. But also what we do is that as we approach, towards breeding season, you want to make sure that they are in the best conditions possible. So maybe providing a little bit of grain along with that hay will actually help them also to be in better shape for that breeding season. But the bucks are going to require a little bit less nutrition from the protein point of view that you're going to have with the lactating doe or the growing kid.
Gotcha. So that's all the questions I have for now. Laura, go ahead.
Well, okay. So sometimes I have to end up going to the sale barn because my hay guy runs out early. Think I've got that down a little better than I used to, but sometimes you go to the sale barn, you look at the hay, and you can see some really nice green leafy looking hay, but it's really grassy, might have a few foxtails in it. And then you'll see another pile of hay that looks really leafy. It's fairly fine stemmed, but it's brown, and it might even be alfalfa that's real brown looking. Is it okay still to feed that? Is that hay that you should walk away from? Or, you know, does the color really matter a whole lot?
Well, you know, there's a couple of things, okay? And what I tell people is usually those are basic aesthetics things that we're looking at. People say, well, it's green, it smells good. And I had done tests where I have hay that is very green, it smells great, and put it next to another, the one that is a little bit discolored. And sometimes people pick the green one because they say, well, it looks fantastic. But that is not really a representation of what a nutrition is. But when it comes to brown hay, one thing is that some brown hay is normal, but if it's excess or very brown hay, and that tells me that it probably is low in nutrition. Sometimes probably that hay have been sitting in the barn for a couple of years in there, and now they try to sell it. So you might be wasting some of your money. Sometimes you have to make sure that it's not a lot of the dust. If the hay starts to fall apart, it's very brown. That's something that I'm gonna be aware of. You know, brown hay means that the elements were no ideal while they baling it. Either it was some bleach or was rain on during the drying process. So that's why we see that hay getting really brown. Brown hay can also be a result, like I said, mentioned, of all hay that have been stored for too long or in improper conditions. And sometimes can cause it to mold as well. So one thing that I usually tell people, you know, if you go brown hay, make sure that you open that bale, make sure that there's no moldy hay in the middle. Because it could be, you never want to feed any moldy hay to goats. It can cause digestive and respiratory problems. So it's very important that you look at what the conditions are, ask the right question, when this hay was baled, how long have been in storage, because if you can get more information, then you can make a better decision. If it's a little bit of brown, might not be so bad, but if it's brown and have been in a store for 2 years, then probably I'm going to be looking somewhere else to get a hay.
Okay, good to know.
Okay, Rocky, I have a dumb question. What do you do with moldy hay?
Moldy hay is usually hay that we've seen that has been baled at higher moisture content. Usually when you bale hay, depending on the size of the bales, could be from 12% to 20%. 12% will be more your square bales type. 20% will be more your round bales. But if you go in more than that and they build a hay, or they cut it and then it rain and then bale it again, one thing is that I would not recommend if you have moldy hay to feed it to animals, especially goats. Goats, those spores can cause a lot of respiratory issues, and you might have causing more problems than actually try to do good with the hay. If especially if you open that hay and you start to see some type of white mold or red mold, those could be an indication also that can have some type of toxins that can be detrimental to the goats.
So what do I do with it? Do I obviously can't sell it to livestock. Do I burn it, or like how do I? I mean,
One thing is you can discard it. You know, if you have somebody that have erosion issues that need to control, you can use it for erosion control.
Oh, okay. I never thought about that. Okay, yeah. I was just generally curious about what to do with old moldy hay.
Yeah, and I think that some people use it to feed cattle, but you know sometimes you need to be also very careful when you feed it to cattle, because you know especially if you're feeding that hay in the middle of the summer, middle of the winter, keep in mind that when we have cold temperatures, those animals, either cattle or goats, are going to be stressed. They're trying to maintain their metabolic functions. So their immune system probably might be a little more weakened because it's trying to cope with environmental conditions. So when you introduce these type of issues and spores that can cause and be opportunistic because of the immune system being a little bit more low, try to maintain the metabolic functions, then you're making that go more susceptible to some respiratory issues because of the spores.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, that makes sense there. Now I know what to do with, hopefully I won't have moldy hay, but now I know what to do with it if I do have it. So thank you for that.
Yeah. I always wonder that too, you know, is a little bit okay, or, you know, and we've got cattle that we feed it to too. So that's yeah.
Yeah. If it's something that is, if you open the bale and you see that it's not very well spread throughout the bale, you can discard the part that had the mold, maybe salvage some of those, but you need to be very careful, you know, and when you do that.
Gotcha.
And I know that if you have moldy hay and you want to know what kind of spores you might be dealing with, I know that the forage lab at Cornell University can do a mold count, and sometimes you can identify some also the mold, type of mold that you have. I'm not sure what the current prices they have for those analyses, but they are not cheap.
Gotcha. Well, that's a great segue into talking about some of the forage quality and testing there on that. Do you want to talk a little bit about, I guess, what's ideal for, obviously there's no ideal, but what type of relative feed value are we looking for in lactating goats for that year, and what you're looking for in a test?
Yeah, you know, well, one thing with relative feed value only applies to alfalfa. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at other grass-seed hay that is not a legume, I usually try to use, and most labs provide this now, it's called their Relative Feed Quality Index, RFQ. And the RFQ allows to compare alfalfa and grasses on the same plane more than the relative feed value. But if you have a doe that is lactating, I want to make sure that my alfalfa RFB values are at least 200 or a little bit of above. If I got a grassy hay, I want to be at least that those RFB values are at least 180. The RFQ values are at least 180 or higher than that.
Gotcha. So if they're lower than that 180, let's say they're at 150, what's the strategy to supplement that? Is that where you go right back to the alfalfa pellet, or what's your first step in kind of remedying that?
Well, one thing is I usually tell producers, to do that, you have to have a hay analysis first.
Yep.
Once you collect that sample, you send it to a lab, and you get it analyzed, then we can utilize that data to determine what you need. And one thing that I always tell producers is when you take a sample and send it to a lab, make sure that sample is going to a lab that has been certified by the National Forage Testing Association. This is a very reputable organization. What they do, they provide a yearly certification to the labs that are members of this organization. And what they do is they send two samples quarterly for quality control. Those are blind samples. The lab had to run the samples, and they send the results back to the National Forage Testing Association. And at the end of the year, they either get certified or do not get certified. So it's very important that you send in that sample to a certified lab by NFDA. Once you have that report back, then either you have, depending on where you are, you might have a small ruminant nutritionist that you can work with. Some states might have an extension ruminant specialist that can help you then determining what ration you can use to balance that. If it's something that I know that I need protein, if I have alfalfa available and alfalfa have been tested, then I can determine how much alfalfa I'm going to give it every day, how many pounds of alfalfa I want to give. Or if I do, I can use, if I don't have fresh alfalfa, then I'm going to be looking at alfalfa pellets. And you're going to make sure that you're balancing how much, maybe half a pound daily, based on what you need to make sure that you're supplementing that. But it's important that you balance that with a ration.
Okay.
That makes sense.
So again, as somebody who buys hay, maybe different groups of hay, maybe from different suppliers or from different cuttings, when I get my hay tested, one has protein that's at 15% and the other is a 9%. And mm-hmm. I'm looking at does who are about a month out of getting ready to kid and are, in early lactation. Mm-hmm. Which hay should I feed first?
Okay. If you have one that is 15% and they're, like you say, about a month for those animals to kid, then I'm going to be feeding that hay to those animals that need higher nutrition. If I go dry does that are not close to kidding yet, and then I'm probably going to be feeding that's 9% and maybe try to do a little bit of supplementation. One thing that also is very important, and that's what I usually tell people try to test your hay early in the season before you start feeding your feeding season, because then you know what you have and how you can strategize that. Usually hay that is a much lower quality, I want to feed it early in the fall. And the reason for that is because in the fall, we're not very cold. They're not stressed. They don't have this hot to maintain that high metabolic requirements to maintain heat on their bodies. So then I'm probably going to use that lower quality hay. But as I get into the winter, then I want to be able to switch to that higher quality, higher protein hay, where I'm going to be able to meet the demands and going to maintain their metabolic functions. They're going to be able to allocate some of that energy to heat, generate heat to maintain them warm throughout the winter. So it's a strategizing how to use that much better.
Okay, that makes sense to me there.
Yeah, absolutely. Laura, what other scenarios do you have on your mind?
So this may be a really dumb question, but it's one that I've had people ask me before and I didn't have a good answer. Is there a magic calculator of some kind that says, okay, you have X number of milking does, say standard size does, you need to figure out on X number of pounds of hay for them or bales of hay for them or, you know, like a calculator so that you can figure it out. So when hay's plentiful in the summertime, you can stock up so you're not scrambling at the end of the year.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple Excel sheets, and actually we just finished one that we're going to be uploading to our extension website, and anybody can use it to calculate your hay for goats. But one thing that you need to take into account is also what if you divide them in groups and then be able to determine what how much hay do you need. If you have a dry, non-lactating goat, they might require 3 to 5% of the body weight. If you have a pregnant lactating goat, they might require maybe 5 to 7% of their body weight. So let's say, for example, I'm going to give you an example here. If you have a goat that weighs, let's say, 120 pounds, and it requires 4% of their body weight, that means that they require up to about 4.8 pounds of forage per day. So then if you know that you're going to be feeding 6 months, you can calculate in how much hay I need for that goat. How many of those goat do I need? So it all depends on those and those requirements that you'll be able to do that. So it's very important that you be able to then translate that. Let's say, for example, another one is, let's say that you have, goats that require, you have teddy goats, for example, dry goats. And like we said, they're going to require is about 4.8. That means that they're going to need about 120 pounds of hay per day. That's close to about 260-pound bales, okay?
Okay.
So if you're feeding for 6 months, that will be about 504 bales. And what I'm doing in there is, remember, goats are going to waste quite a bit of hay too. So you need to build in there certain percentage that you are confident or comfortable. We say, well, you know, my goats, they waste 10% of the hay, or they weigh 15%, depending on how you're feeding that hay. So you need to build that into that. So if you know that you need X amount of hay, I'm going to put a 10% because they're going to lose that 10%. But also remember that Mother Nature can be unpredictable. So another thing that I usually tell producers is make sure that you have what I call a savings in there, or an emergency hay. Let's say that the weather got really bad and it got very cold, and the snow stayed there, or got very cold for us in the south, and the grasses that are supposed to be growing very well by March for us are not going to be growing until April or early May. So I got another 6 weeks that I need to figure out how to feed those hay, those goats. So I usually like to put in there a 20 or 30% what I call emergency reserve. So that allows me to actually be ready and be prepared for that. So if I take all those numbers into consideration, we mentioned that, you know, for 6 months, you need about 504 bales, and that include that 10% waste and then that 30% emergency reserve. That means that if I'm feeding hay year-round, I'm going to be looking close to 1,000 bales, a little bit over 1,000 bales I'm going to need for those goats. So it's something that helps you actually get ready and know what you need to go and plan ahead before anything happens.
Cameron, do you think we could maybe share that calculator on our Facebook page so our listeners could take advantage of that?
Yeah, definitely. Rocky, when you get that uploaded, let us know and we'll share it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, or I can send you the actual Excel sheet too if you can share it.
Perfect. Too. Yeah, that'd be great. Okay.
So I'm just going to throw this out here. That really puts the thumb screws on when you think about, oh, it's just one more goat.
Oh yeah, you know, and when you take into, you know, the calculator also allows you to put the price per bale of hay. So you actually be able to know how much money I need to be thinking about investing in hay for the time period I'm going to be feeding that hay as well.
Yeah, probably that math that you really don't want to do, but you really should do, right?
Yeah. Economics. Always make sure that you have the economics involved, because that's the bottom line that makes that decision with what hay I should be buying, where I need to be buying that hay, and also make sure that that hay is being tested, that if I'm going to buy hay from somebody, that I make sure that when I'm paying $10 for a 50-pound bale, I want to make sure that I'm getting a good nutrition. I'm going to give you an example. This came from a cattle producer here a month ago in South Mississippi that called me. And they said, this guy got this round bale for sale. Should I buy him? And I asked him, I said, have you taken a hay analysis? Or does he have a hay analysis? I said, no, he doesn't have one. I said, well, I will highly encourage you that you get a hay analysis before you pay $60 for a round bale. That is 150-pound bales. So he called me 2 weeks later to tell me that he bought the hay and the cows were not eating it. So he got then a hay analysis and the protein was only 2%.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's so like straw. That's
worse than straw. So when you're paying $60 for an 800-pound round bale and you only get a 2% crude protein, that is a major loss, economic loss right there. So always make sure that you get a hay analysis so you make sure that your economics make sense.
Well, I think that is a great way to wrap it up there. Wouldn't you agree, Rocky, that you should get your hay tested?
Yes, you need to get your hay tested. And if, you know, sometimes there are producers that that if you know that producer very well, you can say, hey, can you get a hay tested? If he said no, I said, well, will you mind if I take a sample and get it analyzed before I buy the hay? Some of them might say yes and some might no. If they say no, I'll probably go somewhere else and make sure that I can get a hay analysis before I invest that much money.
Yeah,
I would think, especially in this day of, and I hate to say it, but my goodness, on social media, there are so many hay scammers.
Yeah,
I think it's across the country because I've seen other people talk about it too. Maybe that separates the good ones from the scammers are the ones who are willing to put up what their hay analysis is before you even make that foray into deciding to buy it or not.
Yeah, and this is, you know, and the dairy goat industry, this is very important because we don't think, you know, how much hay is being utilized, but you know, when you're looking even at small herds and you start looking at your hay feed bill for the year, it can run into a thousand sometimes. So it's very important that you protect that economic investment that you're making for your goats.
I would say that if I were to have a joke here about hay testing, the producers that test their hay really are separating the leaf from the stem.
Groan.
I was working on that one all episode.
You know, there are some studies have been done like that, but, you know, leafy materials are going to be more digestible. But, you know, in goats in general, they prefer something that's more leafy, not so much stemmy and coarse. And you can see some differences on in how much waste you have also based on the maturity of that hay. Mm. And you know, and the most of the nutritive value of the hay also based on how mature that hay. The more mature that hay is, the higher the fiber, the less protein you're gonna see. Usually it's because if somebody is cutting hay when already the grass had the seed heads, that means that all the nitrogen that is used for making that protein in the plant is being translocated to produce that seed. So you end up with a lower protein levels on the leaves and the stem of that grass.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Well, Rocky, thank you so much for joining us this week. We always appreciate you coming on. Where can the listeners find more information about what you got cooking in your world and all of your business endeavors?
Thank you so much for having me. But if people want to get more information, they can follow us on our Facebook page called Rich Farms. But also they can visit our Facebook Mississippi Forages. I usually post a lot of information related to forage production, but also we have our forage website on the Mississippi State Extension website. They can go to extension.msstate.edu and just click on the menu and find forages. And we always upload new information, new tools that they can use for making decisions on their farms.
Awesome. Thank you, Rocky. Laura, where can the listeners find us?
Well, we are always on Facebook and really appreciate people's comments and questions and so forth. So find us on Goat Gab on Facebook. If you want to listen to past episodes, any place that you can download podcasts. So we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Google Podcasts. Just take a look, give us a rating if you like us, give us some feedback, because you know, that's how we know what you like. So we're so glad that you joined us this week and hope you come back again next episode. And have a wonderful holiday, a beautiful Christmas if you celebrate. And we'll catch you on the next episode of Goat Gab.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks, everybody.